That got your attention. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 6th, 2007 Carborough Board of Aldermen regular meeting. We'll begin with requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. We have one person signed up, Ms. Michelle Rivest, if you would come up.
Good evening. I'm Michelle Rivest, and I'm the Executive Director of the Orange County Partnership for Young Children. And I wanted to have just a few minutes of your time tonight to tell you about one of our new initiatives called the Healthy Kids Campaign. And we put a packet in front of all the aldermen. We are the local Smart Start agency, and our organization has become very concerned about the issue of childhood obesity. As you probably know, it's an epidemic facing our country, our state, and right here in Orange County. In fact, we have some of the highest rates of childhood obesity in North Carolina, which is always a surprise, but we're one of the top three or four worst counties in North Carolina. And children who are overweight or obese are certainly experiencing a lot of critical health problems, heart disease, stroke, diabetes. In fact, some of these illnesses are only adult illnesses up until this generation of children. And for the first time, children may not live as long, this generation of children may not live as long as their parents. So things are really changing for our children because of the childhood obesity epidemic. And our board has decided to launch a Healthy Kids campaign. We are in the process of a fundraising effort to raise $600,000 throughout the county to start five new projects in our community wherever children live, learn, play, and pray. And some of these programs we hope will benefit Carborough citizens, which is why I'm bringing it to you tonight. We hope to start some programs in our child care community, through our doctor's offices, our faith community, our parks and recreation departments, and in our community by starting community garden projects. We have an opportunity through our campaign to apply for funding from the Health and Wellness Trust Fund, which is partnered with Blue Cross Blue Shield to address the childhood obesity issue. And to do so, they have an initiative called Fit Communities. And a community actually has to be designated a fit community to be in the running for one of these grants. And so we very much, through our organization, would like to apply on Carborough's behalf. As a resident of Carborough, I know very well, or certainly somewhat, the kinds of progressive things we're doing to make Carborough a fit community, a walkable community for our children and families. Chapel Hill, just so you know, has already received this designation last year through this grant process, and I understand that the town of Hillsborough is applying. So we would be applying on behalf of the town, and then what we'd like to do is apply for one of the Fit Community grants. And what we'd like to do with those grant funds is focus on one of our projects, and that's the community garden project. There's a lot of interest in Carborough to have a community garden or several community garden sites. There are people from the farmers market that I've been working with who know that we would get the support of local farmers in doing this kind of thing and the farmers market. There are some local chefs who are very interested in this. So we just came from a meeting with the Orange County Cooperative Extension. Master gardeners are already volunteering throughout the community to help this. So what we hope to do through our organization is apply for the status of fit communities on Carborough's behalf and then apply for the grant and bring those funds into Carborough to start some community garden projects in the next year. So that's what we're about. I wanted to tell you about this. We certainly look forward to partnering with you in any way possible to make this work for Carborough and for our citizens and children and families in our community.
Thank you, Michelle. Do you have a location or locations in mind for the gardens? Have you identified those?
We haven't. So we're just talking with residents and with different folks in town about that. Some of the gardens we hope will be in child care centers and in the school sites.
Okay.
As well as we'd like to see a public site where the entire community could participate.
Well, I guess I would like to refer to staff, and if, I mean, it's a fairly flat space at the Martin Luther King
Future Park,
and I don't know if that's why I said refer to staff first before I say, oh, that's where we could do it. So. Only because, you know, we're not doing anything at the moment, but it's, you know, except for cutting the grass. I mean, we're not letting it. And so that might be a, and it's accessible using the bus system. So that's why I was thinking. But I would ask if the board would agree to maybe get a report back from staff if that's, if people would agree to that.
So that or any other sites the staff might be able to suggest.
Right.
Michelle, I was just wondering if you had been in contact with the schools as to whether or not the schools currently have gardens, because that's 10, 12 years ago. I had gotten a grant for the school district, and we started compost demonstration sites and gardens at 6 of the elementary schools, and some of them, I think, are still running. So
we're in the process, really, of surveying some of those possibilities. Neil Peterson is on our board, so we're very much interested in connecting with the school systems and making this an ongoing community project. So thank you for that reminder.
And just another suggestion. I would suggest if you would leave your email address. There's someone in our church who is responsible for health, and you were talking about faith-based communities.
Yes.
Ethel Jean Jackson has done a lot of work internally in our church with regards to nutrition and stuff, so we don't get to have as much fried chicken, which is a good thing. Exactly. So she's a good contact person in the community because she worked at UNC. So if you would leave your email address with Sarah Williamson, I could try to get both of you together because that could be also another partnership.
Great. Thank you for that. Is that the Carborough Methodist Church right here?
Oh, no. St. Paul and
Saint
Church,
Paul
right across
mm-hmm.
the street. We're halfway in Carborough and halfway in Chapel Hill, so
okay.
I always say it's a Carborough Church. We should. But she would be very helpful.
Terrific. Yeah, I think any one of these projects that we're considering will be taking place in Carborough in some fashion. It's just for this Fit Communities project, we want to start with the community gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Good.
Thank you for your time and your interest. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Michelle. Are there any other persons here to address us on matters that are not on our agenda? If not, Mr. Manager, the consent agenda.
Item 1 is approval of minutes of the previous meetings of January 16th and 23rd. Item 2 is a request to set a public hearing on the temporary street closing permit application for the Kidney Care 5K run and walk, and that hearing is proposed for February 27th. Item 3 is a budget amendment for a Homeland Security grant. Item 4 is a request to declare a 1993 motor grader a surplus property and authorizing the purchase of a new motor grader. Item 5 is a request to approve a resolution for the issuance of $2,590,000 in sidewalk fund anticipation notes. And item 6 is a request to approve a memorandum of agreement for long-range transit planning.
Move the items.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, we are on item D1, preliminary report on pay-as-you-throw refuse.
Okay. This is a preliminary report on the possibilities and implications of implementing the pay-as-you-throw refuse collection. Purpose of this agenda item is to provide the Board of Aldermen with a preliminary report on the possibilities and implications of implementing a pay-as-you-throw program for single-family residential waste collection within the town of Carborough. And George Size, our Public Works Director, has a presentation. George.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. The report in your packet is essentially the same as when first presented, but there have been two pieces of information added, a email from Blair Pollack of Orange County Solid Waste and also an email from a concerned citizen. I have a brief presentation in hopes of providing some context for pay-as-you-throw. The presentation does not follow through with the report, but again, hopefully through some slides here, I can provide some context for some of the issues and implications. The first slide here shows that there's just more than our weekly collection of household trash. There are several other services that we provide as well. Weekly collection of the household trash under the single family, yard waste collection, which is twice per month, bulky item pickup, and there is a fee schedule for certain items, loose leaf collection, which is provided November through February, and then a note that the weekly curbside recycling service for those in town is provided by Orange County Solid Waste. And, of course, then we also have another residential component, and that is for our apartment complexes, noted here as multifamily residential dumpster service. And then we also have commercial dumpster service, whereby some of our commercial properties pay a fee for that service. Just to give you an idea of some of the amounts that are collected, you see these are in tons for the fiscal year 05-06, residential refuse, residential yard waste, again, multifamily, commercial refuse. The residential refuse, it totals about 8,000 tons. What is not shown on here is also some demolition material, which brings our annual total to about 8,000 tons. The residential refuse component is about 34%. And to give you an idea how this relates to the county, I believe in 04, 05, I did not have 05, 06, collected about 85,000 tons. The amount recycled was about 13,000 tons, which is about 15%. That makes the town of Carver about 9% of that total. Give you an idea, here's some of the folks that haul all that tonnage in. This is five of our seven collectors. The other two were too busy to have their photo taken. Two purposes for showing this slide, and this is our fully automated truck, which we implemented in 2004, which greatly improved our productivity, where we were able to reduce the full-time equivalents for residential refuse by one FTE, one full-time equivalent. The other reason for showing this is in the aspect of pay-as-you-throw and having the ability to see whether there are tags and or bags of a certain color and so forth. You can see that the collector is in the cab of the truck and, of course, is unable to see, only except to see if the lid hasn't opened or something is stuck in the truck. We are receiving our second fully automated truck, I believe, next week. This is just a slide to show you the household sticker for holiday schedule, not household, holiday schedule, which we implemented last fall. Implementation of this, just as an example, freed up about 120 hours for other productive work. For those at home with widescreen high definition, viewer discretion is advised for these next couple of slides here. Again, this is to show the context in case enforcement is an issue here with our current automated system. And if you can imagine either having stickers or specially printed or colored bags within the container, or as in the city of Eden, trying to estimate the amount of solid waste within a cart as to whether it's 30. This is roughly a 98-gallon cart, whether it's 32 gallons, 65 gallons, and so forth. And you can see although we encourage our residents to put everything in plastic bags to control litter, is one reason it helps to keep the carts clean is another. That's not always possible. And here's another slide. This is, again, also the inside of a cart. So hopefully that gives you some context for some of the issues that are outlined in the report. The last slide here just highlights some of the potential issues and implications. Now let me get my slide here. The first is noted in the report, no matter which system that we look at, whether we go to a tag system or a bag system or estimating the amount within, there's some compatibility problems and difficult to implement. Another possibility is changing size carts, having a tiered system for different size of carts. And, of course, as you know, we have one size cart now. Enforcement issues is the second thing noted, may be impractical. The city of Eden has a system whereby again, folks pay by the amount that they put in their cart, and even though it's all the same cart, a worker spends about 40% of their time on enforcement. As noted in the report, they do have some issues and problems with that. Antonio Baxter, who works in our department, had called the solid waste supervisor and got some firsthand information as to some of the difficulties with that. The third thing listed is the impact on the budget, and within the report, and I do have a slide that shows some very preliminary analysis of either going to a cart system or a bag tag system. The next item is difficult to determine the additional quantity of the material recycled reduced. The report makes some assumptions based on information provided by Orange County Solid Waste as to really how much additional recycling we would get. And it's anticipated that may be on the order of 150 tons to 225 tons. And that's based on somebody who has done research on additional recycling where there is already a mature recycling program in place, which is what we have. The next item is the impact on Orange County Solid Waste Plan, and they have some concerns certainly with one of the agencies, I guess, within our umbrella or our group possibly doing this, and of course that has to do with the fact that even though if we were to be diverting more and recycling more, it doesn't go away. The folks from Orange County will have to pick that up. And although it's not a great amount, it is something that they would need to be concerned about. And also, I think, from the fact that, again, we work as a group, and a lot of the planning is based on that. So they have concerns. Waste shifting is another way of saying possibly folks, if they're faced with a fee, will look to some other method for disposal. Heaven forbid burning or taking it to your neighbor's trash or to a dumpster down the street. And then again, the last one here is viewed in context of the entire collection system. The report basically deals with pay-as-you-throw for a residential, single family. We already have some pay-as-you-throw aspects in our plan, and that's with bulky waste pickup. People have to pay for large items, also for an extra amounts of yard waste. And, of course, we do have a fee schedule for commercial. But again, as I pointed out in the beginning, we have various other aspects, multifamily, residential collection being one of them. With that, I'll entertain a question.
Did anybody come to speak on this item from the public? If not, come on up, sir.
My name is Devin Clark. I live at 105 K Street in Carrboro. I believe I sent most of you an email, the ones I could contact anyway. And I don't really know why I'm coming up here since he's addressed most of the things that I did in my email. And I really can't see one question I'd like to ask is why are we considering this to start with all these problems? I really can't see why we're even considering this now that I look at all the problems that are there. But I will run over a few notes, and I think I lost the copy of my email that I sent to you, so I don't know what it was, but I made some more notes here anyway. To start with, I consider the garbage and waste collection to be one of the basic services of the town, and has been and should be paid for with our property taxes, just as the fire protection or police protection or whatever. As a matter of fact, I think it's probably the most recognized or noticed service that we get. Everybody participates in it. I agree with you on the pay-as-you-throw fee that, or however you want to call it. Some people might be more mindful and put more of their waste in the mixed waste container that we recently received, which I appreciate and I use. And since this has been implemented, I know my garbage, if you want to call it the other part, has been decreased. I have a lot less because I try to recycle everything I can. But saying this, I do kind of dislike the idea of being punished, if you might call it, for with a fee of any size or any way when I'm trying to do my part, so to speak. And why do we need a fee to pay for something that we're already paying for? I mean, I consider the fact that we're already paying for this and our property taxes, and I don't see the need for another fee other than the fact of trying to encourage people to dispose of less in their garbage and recycle more, and I can understand that part of it. Anyway, you look at a fee, it's just another tax, in my estimation, and I think we have high enough taxes as it is. I also believe that the cost of implementing the pay-as-you-throw is significant, as this seems to imply right here, that increasing the personnel costs, office space, and all the other stuff, and once you put somebody in this position, it's going to be so overwhelming that they're going to need assistance right away, and you know how that works. And I can also see a large number, or at least some people, disposing of their garbage in undesirable ways, roadside dumping, using other people's dumpsters or whatever. And I'm sure you've all considered this a lot, and so have I. Our taxes are high enough already, and people on fixed incomes, such as myself, often depend on a 1 to 3% cost of living allowance each year, and that's quickly eaten up by high insurance premiums and high health care costs and property taxes or taxes of any sort. And I just, for this reason, I have to, I have no earned income, and so I have to depend on that. And my spendable income has decreased for the past 4 years. I have less spendable income with the increase in taxes and health care costs and insurance than I did before, and so I'm going backwards fast. And so I'd appreciate your consideration in any of these in this matter on the comments I've made. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Come on up, Riley.
Thank you for recognizing me. As you know, I've been talking about this particular subject myself with you for about 5 years now, and I need to correct one thing with George here. And multifamily units are not just apartment complexes. They are also townhome and condominium complexes as well that are not just rentals. But we share the same burdens of, you know, even though we have dumpsters, which actually consolidates the waste in one pickup as opposed to separate items, as George pointed out in some of his pictures with the single bins, we would have the same problem of trying to get everybody to cooperate and use specific bags. You know, we pretty much have to do our own enforcement where George is doing enforcement on the street level. And that's something that's just unmanageable for us. It's hard enough trying to get people to be compliant as it is now. Sometimes, you know, we try to get people to use bags, but sometimes they use the nice, big, heavy, thick bags, and you don't want to know what's in some of those bags. So, I'm with staff on this, and this just doesn't seem to be a workable plan, though I think it was probably worth the exercise of seeing if it is feasible, but clearly this is not. I need to be cautioned that whatever we look at, do consider multifamily units and not just as apartment complexes. We are not all apartment complexes. We don't have the same, as you saw in one of the earlier slides here, you know, single-family homes have a host of additional services that come with the leaf pickup. We don't get that same consideration because we tend to have lawn care people taking care of the whole complex, and any of our waste is not picked up by the town. We pay extra for that. You know, so we have additional services that we pay for out of our own pocket that are awarded to single-family homes, and our taxes aren't adjusted according to that, so for what we don't get. So please take that into consideration as we look at some of these issues. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bob. Thanks. Yeah, I have a couple things that I want to say about this. I've been doing a lot of reading on this issue and have some additional background I want to bring forth and all. But first, you know, talking about what, you know, why we're looking at this. You know, this is a part of our Vision 2020 is to, you know, pay as you throw is given, not as a goal for the town, but as an example of the kind of waste reduction strategy that we might look into. Hundreds of communities across the country are successfully using pay as you throw, all sizes, all kinds, and many, many different variations of the system, and they're pretty much universally experiencing both waste reduction and cost savings. And that's part of you know, what's often overlooked and the concerns that come up early on. And in reading the case studies of many of these municipalities, what you find is that there's a lot of concern when the system is first raised and a lot of satisfaction after, that people consider it to be a fairer system, as in any system where you don't want to be paying the cost of people who are the high users when you yourself are a low user. If you're the case, as we heard a few minutes ago, of someone who's doing everything they can to reduce their volume of waste, that person should not be paying the same rate for waste as someone who's disposing of, you know, who's basically, you know, flagrant in their disposal habits. And so pay-as-you-throw addresses that. But given all that, I think George correctly raises a number of questions we need to look into in Carborough, and I think there are several in particular that are key. And I was talking to Randy over the weekend in her role as our liaison to the EAB as to whether EAB might be able to take on some additional research on this, and she thought that once some of the work they're doing now on the LUO updates is finished up over the next couple of few months, that would be a possibility. And I've identified four areas that I think are key for us to understand about pay-as-you-throw, and I'm interested in hearing what else others have. But those are, one is what the our ability in Carborough to experience additional waste reduction is. I mean, how much more can we reduce? And the report we've had and a lot of the discussion is focused, and it tends to focus on recycling and how good we're doing at recycling. But there's recycling, as everyone knows, is the third of our solid waste strategies, which are reduce, reuse, and then recycle. And there's a lot in terms of reduction that we're not working on in any organized fashion. And, you know, for example, organic waste composting comes to mind, which I think in the report was a 30-some percent of our waste stream, and strikes me as a large area for additional waste reduction that hasn't been considered. And my point is not to explore that tonight, but that's the kind of thing that needs to be answered. So one point is additional, what room we have for reduction, how far can we go from where we are. And are there additional cost savings beyond what George has identified? Second is the kind of public education campaigns that have been effective in other communities, because it's also widely reported that the kinds of concerns that we've heard tonight and that we've gotten in some emails come up early on. And, you know, the idea that once, you know, if you take something that's paid for in the general, out of general tax revenue, and that's paid for out of a fee, well, no, it's no longer paid for in the tax fee.
but then also the savings that are available both to the town broadly and then to individual households. There needs to be a lot more education on that, as well as the environmental benefits, and that's been done effectively in other communities. There is a point that Bob raises about the various forms of multifamily, and I'm interested to see if there have been effective strategies in other communities and that we might be able to take advantage of here in Carrboro. And the fifth is the question of equity, how other communities have addressed equity issues. And I sent the board a note from, it might have been Eden, but I'm not sure, from one of the North Carolina participants earlier today, where they had a fixed low fee, lower rate for senior citizens, and they also had a mechanism for addressing the financial burden on lower income residents. So there are examples of that I'd like to find out about. So I guess what I'm proposing is that we build on this report by identifying the key areas, of which I think those are four, and perhaps, Randy said she would be willing to explore on Thursday with the EAB if they were interested in taking that up, or else perhaps some alternate mechanism.
John?
We have been wrestling with this for a while, and also we always debate about, regressive taxes, and I think we need to answer to the citizens of Carrboro why, sort of, and I would love for the staff to explain this to all of us and the folks who are watching at home, why this is not included in our tax base, as a lot of folks assume. And also, the recycling system that we have today, it's a disincentive to recycle. The more tons we produce, the better price we get. So I would like to look at, instead of a punishment system to reduce waste and encourage recycling, a rewarding system that encourages folks to produce less waste and recycle more and do more composting. I will leave it there. There are some thoughts I have about that, and I think once we answer that, folks, maybe we can learn from the mistakes of other communities, but I do believe that it should be part of the tax base. It will, we can always debate it, but I believe if you look at the number of folks, low-income people, and I like the idea of for senior, kind of like the homestead provision that we already have in taxes. But talking about equity issues, if we put it in the tax base, the folks who can most afford it will help subsidize the low-income folks' cost of recycling. And so I'm with you then that we need to look at what's most equitable, and I will continue to make it Carrboro more affordable for working class folks and people in fixed incomes.
Looked like George was getting ready to answer.
Yeah, Mr. Manager, sorry.
Say something clarifying.
Well, we may both answer, but I just want to respond to your first question, John, and that is the basic residential refuse service is included as a part of people's property taxes now. The residential pickup, both multifamily and single family, is a part of what they pay in property taxes. We charge a fee for certain bulk items, but not for the weekly refuse pickup. We were asked to look at a pay-as-you-throw system, and a pay-as-you-throw system, by definition, is something you pay for with some type of fee. We're not proposing this, we were asked to report on it, and that's what we're doing. To make a pay-as-you-throw system a part of the normal system of taxation. I'm not sure quite how you do that. I don't know what the incentive is if it's a part of your property tax payments. George, I don't know if you want to add anything.
No, of course there are fees assessed from Orange County for the recycling service.
If we go to the pay-as-you-throw system, which we have for like very selective items, right? The special pickup stuff.
Special bulk pickup, right. Commercial pickup.
If we go with this system, it means everything, recycling, the whole gamma of waste.
You pay recycling with your county tax.
County tax as well. There will be then, I guess what folks need to hear is that if we go with this other system, are my taxes going to go down? Or would I keep paying the same taxes and my tax, and then this extra fee,
well,
which...
You know, our preliminary estimate is that whatever system that we've looked at would increase cost beyond what we're doing today, so it would be difficult to make a reduction on the property tax end when we're actually, we believe, adding cost to implement any kind of pay-as-you-throw system. Is that a correct statement, George?
Yes, yeah. What we've looked at in the assumption on the chart that I've provided is that collection costs will stay the same, and the administration costs to implement this program are added costs to it. That balanced again against the reduction in tipping fees, and we're assuming that there will be some based on the information provided by Blair Pollack. So with that, though, there is an increase in costs in the analysis.
We can't really be much more efficient because we've got one truck and one person. Unless we could find a way to send that truck around without a driver, we're about as efficient as we can be.
George, am I correct that you only consider the additional recycling as reducing, as waste reduction for that?
Yeah, and the information that Mr. Pollack provided, and again, this was based on research somebody who's looked at mature recycling programs like ours. It would be anticipated that you would see roughly an 18% reduction. So 18% of the roughly 2,500 tons that we collect. I forget the portion here, but of that, then a third of that would be possibly recycling, a third to one half, and I guess that's roughly 450. And so a third of that is roughly 150 to half 225. So that was kind of his best guess as to what we might see in reduction that would go to recycling. And as to the amount that would also be reduction, I guess the assumption is that there would be some, but it wasn't quantified. And okay. I think the other thing that we have to look at is the 18%, again, mature programs, the one assumption was a third was recycling, a third I think was also composting and so forth and other forms of reduction. Of course, we had a ban on yard waste and so forth several years ago. So that makes it even more challenging for us as to really what reduction or recycling we'll see. I guess my point is that as best we can get for recycling, and yes, there may be some others. The waste sort information that Blair Pollack provided indicates that ideally there's about 600-some tons that could still be taken out of the system. Again, when you look then at this, what this other statistic says...
For 600 tons, meaning out of the town of Carrboro stream?
Yes. Yeah, tons. The waste sort provided out of the total tonnage, it appeared that there was still a certain amount of plastic, still a certain amount of paper, mm-hmm. and so forth, about 600 tons. So ideally, that's kind of the number that you would be looking to get out. Mm-hmm. The study that's provided by, and I can't remember the researcher, indicates that it probably wouldn't be that high, something more on 150 to 225. And, of course, the chart I provided in the back here shows that Carrboro's, and according to Blair Pollack, is we're doing a pretty good job already, and Carrboro even a little bit better perhaps than some of the other communities, but comparatively. So with a mature program, the fact that we're doing a good job I think there remains a question as to exactly how much would come out.
But that's, George, that's not considering this figure that 22% of our waste stream is food waste. And there's a huge opportunity for reduction.
Well, I don't doubt that there's other things that we can take it out. I think the 625 was an ideal number. If there's other things that, you know, that can be looked at, yes, you know, we can make that comparison, and compare the tipping fee saved against, you know, the added cost. And yes, well, I think what you're saying is that it'd be more than the 150 to 225. Exactly what that is, I don't know.
Alex was next, or do you have a question for me?
I don't have a question for George. I got a comment.
Alex.
Yeah, actually, these are more questions for staff. You know, with the usual disclaimer that I have, I have a general discomfiture with the idea of substituting fees for general fund revenues to pay for basic services as a mechanism to attempt to lever people's behavior in some fashion or another. So with that little disclaimer and proviso, as if we were to continue with this as an academic exercise, if nothing else, just a few questions about kind of the scope that is being contemplated. I won't include myself as necessarily contemplating it. How these financing mechanisms are to work in the assumptions that we're working with. I mean, some of these people have already talked about it. I just want to make sure we're clear on it. So far, what has been discussed, right, is the notion of applying this mechanism, and has only been studied thus far from your end, to single-family residential collection, right?
That's correct.
Because we haven't figured out. Yeah, right. And we're also kind of operating on the assumption then that if one were to implement such a system, that whatever fees would be charged would then cover what exactly?
That's what a lot of communities
in terms of our budget. Like, so if we were going to substitute, if we're going to, as a debit line item, for example, say this is the X number of dollars that amount to the figure that we're having to pay to do X, which is going to be offset by fee Y to reach number zero. See what I'm getting at? So what?
I think so.
Yeah. So have we even come to close to quantifying what that is or ain't?
Well, no. If I can add one of the in some of the research, it runs the gamut. Some folks, I think Loveland, Colorado, is an example that runs their pay as you throw program that recovers all the costs. I think is what says. So what they charge for. They charge a fee then that covers collection, tipping fees, administrative overhead, and so forth.
Right.
Others look more to 60% or 80% recovery of those costs. And some of that is based on concerns. You're never sure exactly what you're gonna take in.
Right.
And there's a certain comfort level then by having the general tax base kind of as a backup if your revenues would fall short. Some folks just have a nominal fee,
right.
75 cents a bag, dollar bag, $2 bag, that sometimes is enough to create the incentive to reduce and recycle. So there's a whole gamut.
But then you've got to have a backup line item in your general revenue to cover the shortfall if you're assuming then that by charging X and then you achieve a reduction, then actually you're cutting into your revenue stream. So
that's correct.
Right. So I'm perhaps overcomplicating it. So let me try to simplify it a little bit. If the scope that we're discussing here is the residential single family. So we break the total cost of collection of that particular discrete aspect of the operation out of our solid waste budget, right?
You're saying single-family residential as an example?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Just, I mean, given that that's the scope of what we're talking about. And so then, in doing so, you offset, I mean, you would then offset whatever that line item, estimated line item cost for those operations with a fee schedule, which you hope would then get us to, again, revenue neutral figure, because that's sort of a caveat that we've been talking about it. And if it ain't a caveat that we've been talking about, then we need to be honest about it. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about it as a policy matter. That's what has been discussed. Am I incorrect in that? And that's the assumption staff's been working with, right?
Well, we haven't. I don't think we've made an assumption about how the fee would be determined. It could be, as George said, a percentage of the actual cost. It could be the incremental cost of doing the pay-as-you-throw. Let's just take George's numbers and say you went with the cart system. We think it's going to cost another $88,000. You could decide to divvy up those incremental costs in some fashion. You could decide to take that plus what we're already paying for the cost of single-family residential collection and decide we want to recover 50% of that, 60% of that, 100% of that.
Okay.
It's really a policy matter for the board.
Right, and I guess what I'm trying to get to, if I can possibly simplify, you know, I don't even know how I can simplify it because it's inherently complex. But if one were to apply as a practical matter all that has been identified as possibly practical is converting the single-family residential to some sort of pay-as-you-throw system. And if we were then to convert the single-family residential to a fee-based system, yet the rest of it is paid out of general revenues, see, here's where you get into these overlapping weird equity issues, which is that the single-family residential property owners are paying the fee, and then as part of the general property tax, they are still paying to support the rest of the system. So then they are paying twice, in effect. And there's just no way of getting around that because within the context of the limitations that we operate under in charging ad valorem taxes, you can't break that out. You cannot differentiate between services offered under the ad valorem tax rate and offer differential tax rates. You can't do it. Not legal. So that's a problem. That's one problem I see. The second, which is sort of the flip side of it, is based on some research that I did forever ago. I guess it goes back to 92, when the county was first kicking around impact fees and all that kind of stuff. And this is sort of apples and oranges because that's a one-time fee, but what I found in running the numbers was real interesting was that while it's often been argued that it's regressive because it's a single fee, it's doubly regressive because the net savings from the general tax rate that is realized by the shifting of those revenues, the bigger your property, the more valuable your property, the more you save. Anyway, in running the numbers, what I found out was that over the life of a mortgage, in that case, that an owner of a very high-end property would actually achieve a net savings, while smaller property owners and certainly renters for whom those costs are passed through would achieve a net loss. At any rate, while that's a one-time fee and this is ongoing, that same dynamic in shifting those costs applies because those savings are realized as a single number or percentage across the ad valorem tax rate in which you may not differentiate. So those are some, those are some fundamental equity issues. I don't know of a way that we can get around, and again, I'm still not excited about the idea of asking people to walk about hat in hand for coupons or other measures to declare their poverty in order to get their trash picked up. So anyway, those are just some issues that if we pursue this further, I'd like researched. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm. I do.
I mean, it took a long way to get there because there's a lot of math involved in a lot of different categories. But those are difficult issues that I think one would need to tackle before.
Well, I agree with Alex, but I'm going to take it a step further. When I get my tax bill from Orange County, if I itemize on my tax bill, then I can reduce my exposure to state and federal income taxes because my ad valorem taxes, I'm allowed to take them off my taxes.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to make you pay, then that's just more money I have to pay to the state and more money I have to pay to the federal government. And I can assure you at the moment I'm not thinking I'm getting my money's worth from the federal government. So, that's not me.
Federal government is calling you right now.
Probably. they're already bugging me now. If we're going to reduce waste and you want to encourage people to reduce waste, I am certainly in favor of having first the education first before we charge somebody for the garbage. And I think if we were to take, raise people's hands now in this room on the board, how many people compost?
Some.
Okay. For Mother's Day, 5 years ago, I wanted a plastic compost thing, and that's what they gave me. And I have, so it won't be smelling, we won't attract bugs, I have frozen greenery, and then I take it out and put it in there. But I think you need to do the education first before you say, I'm going to charge you for the amount of solid waste that you provide. The other thing that I think is also problematic is that if you want to encourage people to use to produce less waste, then I think there needs to be some education about, well, what are you getting your packaging in? Because most stuff is packaged heavily in America. You know, if it's pretty, we're going to buy it. And I think you have to look at that as well, because when you look at the waste streams, again, organic waste, you need to ask how many people are going to compost. There's some people that are never going to compost. I'm not one of those people. I'm jealous when my neighbor's compost looks better than mine. But I think you need to do education before you say we're going to go to pay as you throw. I'm sort of like Alex. I feel like that garbage, fire, and police are some of the basic services that are provided with my tax money. Mm-hmm. And at a minimum, I don't think someone should have to pay for it. I think that is sort of making somebody pay for government services in a manner which really doesn't sort of fit what my idea of government is. And that's a philosophical thing. I don't think you're going to be able to punish everybody or encourage by negative behavior to get people to do what you want to do to reduce waste, because there's got to be other way, because people aren't going to care what the packaging comes in if they want it. They're going to get it anyway. And, you know, the question we should be asking ourselves is, when Carrboro buys something as a town, how much packaging are we buying? Mm-hmm. How is it coming in? If we're not willing to do it ourselves, I don't think by ordinance I should tell my neighbor, okay, we're going to start charging you for the amount of garbage. I just philosophically don't like that idea. And, you know.
Okay, gotta find my voice. First, I have some background on this, and I think it was a great report, and I thank the staff for the report, because the things you came up with are the kinds of things that we look for, and these seven, you know, potential roadblocks are just that. They are roadblocks. I do want to say, as long ago as maybe 1992, because I was involved with the recycling coordination of the Chapel Hill Carver City Schools, I looked at various ways that large amounts of waste and recycling and just waste diversion were handled. And at the time, several municipalities in North Carolina were starting to take on pay-as-you-throw, at least to look at it. And one thing that I noticed, there was a long period of folks doing their homework to find out what works best within their community. So I think much of what you found is true in the overarching picture. But in addition to doing their homework, there were two other items that I found was true, was that there was extensive pre-work on the education side. As Joel and as Dan has pointed out, there was a good couple of years of work on waste diversion, how to reduce the waste stream, composting, things that complement recycling and reuse and purchase decision making. And then the third item was the fact that several of the places set up a pilot in the single family residences so they could get a feel for what it was like. And when they did the pilot, they did it, and this is an answer to what Alex raised, they did it for free. They didn't implement any fee-based, they did no revenue for the first, I think, two or three years so they could get a baseline to see how it works and what it looked like. And what the only thing that I noticed about it after about it took 3 to 5 years. Some places stuck with it. The places that stuck with it ended up tweaking the program so that it looked like their own community. It was not this overarching generic pay-as-you-throw plan. It addressed very specific things that worked in their communities. So my feeling is on this that, I mean, we're here to accept the report, but beyond that, I think it's really important for Carborough to at least, you know, have some group doing some more homework on the possibility, because many communities that are involved with pay-as-you-throw have a profile similar to Carborough, and I just have to ask myself why. What does the pay-as-you-throw address in those communities that are similar to Carborough that we're not ready to address? So while I think we're very early in a conversation, and I think as long as we recognize we're early in a conversation, I think the conversation should go on.
I actually want to comment for just a minute before we go back to others of you on this topic. And I thought, Joel, you raised some interesting points about our waste stream. And without belaboring this exhibit and attachment B, I would just point out a couple of quick things. Dan pointed out that what it says here is that 22% of all our solid waste we're disposing of at the landfill in Orange County, 22% of Carborough's waste is food,
right.
Which is one of the biggest single chunks, and certainly represents a lot of that is eminently compostable food. I also thought it's notable that fully 5% of all of our waste is plastic film, and that's these statistics are by weight and not by volume. Plastic film is 5% of all our garbage, and let me tell you that by volume, that number changes a lot, because plastic film is not heavy. Indeed, it's a very bulky. And other plastic, including styrofoam, accounts for another 5% of all of our waste. And I suspect that much of that styrofoam is largely unnecessary. Much of the film is unnecessary. But That's just the brief social side commentary. That there's an incredible volume of material in plastic film and styrofoam in our waste. I guess the thing that this report makes me wonder about the most is, you know, your estimate is your best guess is that we could reduce our tons of material being landfilled by about what kind of percentage?
Well, I have in there roughly 150 to 220, 25 tons.
That would be diverted out of potentially, yes,
from what we're at now.
Okay, so that would if that's correct, and it's just an estimate, obviously, but if that's correct, that's something like 6 to 9% or something like that of the total figure, I think. If I heard correctly, 2,500. It's about 6 to 9% of the 2,500 ton waste stream. So here's the question that I wonder about: is if our goal as a town was to reduce the amount, reduce our landfill tipping fees that we're paying, reduce what we're putting in the Orange Regional Landfill by something like 6 to 9%. I guess I wonder whether this would be the most effective way to do it. Effective in the sense, I'm sure this would be an effective way to do it in terms of making sure that it happens. But what I'm trying to get at is it the most effective way from a cost perspective and from a Carrboro resident satisfaction perspective? I genuinely feel like I don't know the answer to that question. But it makes me wonder whether, for example, if we were going to decide the bag tag system, you project that a sticker system would cost $9,000 to $12,000, roughly speaking, to implement, an increased cost.
About $19,000.
But there would be an offsetting. Well, okay, yeah.
Right, then a net.
Okay.
Net
well, increase. In any case, whatever the figure might be, the point being that would this be the most? Would this be? Are there possibly other initiatives that we could undertake that might get us similar results, or that might get us, you know, potentially even cost-effective results in terms of $5,000 expended to implement an education campaign resulting in $7,000 in reduced tipping fees or something like that, where there's an actual dollar savings to our general fund. I just want to throw that thought out there as something that we should look at. Basically, what is the bang for the buck that we could possibly get from we see here what your estimate is of what it would be for this program. I would be interested to have the board and the staff think about what kind of returns might we get by investing in, for example, you know, I can imagine that for a couple of $1,000s you could do a remarkable amount of education about the opportunities for reducing food going into landfill, waste food going into landfill. And since that constitutes 22% of our waste stream, that seems like a huge opportunity. That's kind of my reaction at this point to this issue. The other thing I'll say is, and I think I was quoted in the media as pointing to this as well, I think that because Carrboro and Chapel Hill are two towns that live cheek by jowl, that it would be this would make more sense as something to consider as a possibility if it were the case that Chapel Hill was planning on doing something similar. In other words, that the notion of having two towns that are right next to each other, and one of them has a pay-as-you-throw system and the other doesn't, I think presents could present a whole lot of problems. I'm not proposing that we would have one program, but I'm saying that if Chapel Hill was doing a sticker program and we were doing a sticker program at the same time, that there might be it might be possible to coordinate our efforts in a way that would reduce the number of problems created between the two towns. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I don't disagree with any of that, but something I think that Joel touched on, and sort of the next overarching issue that I had, and I think Mark, you were alluding to this as well, which is that, I mean, this discussion has been going on for a very long time and sort of fits and starts, and just hang on, Bob. That it's been back asswards. And that there's almost a messianic holy grail quality to it in that the discussion has always begun with the mechanism, and there is an almost obsessive quality to this mechanism. How do we get to pay as you throw? What the hell is it you're trying to achieve in the first place? And that is reduction in the waste stream. I think this is what Mark and Joel were getting at, which is that a more holistic look needs to be given to that particular goal rather than, again, a laser-like focus on a particular mechanism that some people seem to like with, an obsessive quality and have for a long time around here. That's been the nature of the discussion, and it's always struck me as rather odd. So that approach to how we continue this discussion, I think, would be probably more productive. When Joel and Randy were talking about the notion of an education campaign, it occurred to me that the outreach efforts are really very quiet. I mean, they haven't been very aggressive lately. It's just sort of been assumed that as we present a greater range of services, the people are automatically going to take advantage of them, and wondering whether people are actually making full use of what is offered or have been aggressively informed of what is offered. I know there is confusion about, you know, what you can put in the mixed waste bin, for example. Mark, I think that's directly what you were getting to, right? Was, you know, $5,000 worth of as opposed to education, marketing. Actually, market the product. I think that, if oddly enough, people seem to resent being sold on something less than they do being lectured. Just some notions about approaches. Make it an attractive proposition.
Briefly. I think we go ahead with this program. We should call it LAYT, Leave at Your Throat, Leave Carborough, for low income. I think education, we need to set example. I mean, and the town and do it ourselves first, encourage folks, you know, to walk the talk. But also, another way to do this thing and to impact behavior in another way without raising taxes is to, instead of picking up the garbage every week, we do it every 2 weeks. And you will see folks who don't want to have things smelling and wrapping
up. How big is your inbox, John?
We have to really keep, you will be forced to throw less. And, it will immediately make you more conscious, but just throwing an idea of how you can impact behavior. But education, we should start aggressive education, and also, we got a growing Spanish-speaking community and Asians and Eastern Europeans that we need to think about those issues.
That's a really good point. Yeah, a few points. I agree with all the comments that have been made around about education being key in any system, and I attempted to say that at the outset and hope that I was successful. I also agree with what Joel was saying about packaging being a concern, and, you know, certainly someone who's going out and buying a $500 computer is going to be willing to pay the extra $2 to get a bag to throw the whatever you that foam is or crap they wrap it in. John, in terms of pay-as-you-throw being a problem or having to be a problem for low-income households, that's just flat-out wrong. There are many, many communities that have solved that problem. I didn't come here tonight with a list of who they are and how they've done it because I didn't think we'd need to get into that level of detail. I did email you one case earlier this afternoon that maybe you didn't get to read, but okay, well, welcome home. There are many, many communities that have implemented measures to address that, and I believe 100% that if Carrboro were to go this route, that we would want to adopt some kind of measure like that. The idea that garbage is a basic service that should be paid for always by taxes, well, let's think about something more basic than garbage to human life. That's water. You know, we all pay a water bill, and OWASA's been very focused over the last, well, since the drought, certainly, on implementing conservation rates because they want us to conserve water. My neighbor, who has an automated sprinkler system and spends some water every day watering the sidewalk, you know, on that conservation rate, is paying more for that water than I am for watering less. That's not a punishment. That's a cost that the neighbor chooses to take on, much as the other neighbor who has a big SUV chooses to take on the cost of that gas rather than have a more fuel-efficient automobile. So I think, you know, that's just important to recognize. And in terms of paying for solid waste collection, you know, we have neighbors, you know, within a few miles of here who are paying to have their trash picked up by private contractors. That's, you know, very, very common. I think it's also important, you know, when we think about the costs, that we understand the full cost of our wastefulness, that the tipping fee and the cost we see in the Carrboro Town budget is not the whole picture. Every scrap of paper that we put in the landfill rather than in the recycling has an environmental impact that has a measurable cost at some level on human well-being and on the well-being of the planet. And I'm not saying that we need to quantify that and capture those costs, but I'm thinking that, you know, part of what it means to be a progressive leader on environmental issues is to look beyond the narrow cost definition and look for measures to affordably pursue good solutions. So with that in mind, I want to appreciate Mark, you know, getting to the point that what we, you know, at heart what we want to do is think more broadly about solid waste reduction. And, you know, if this is the way that we get that conversation started, so be it. Let me just respond to the other point Mark made, which is that I know that it was either in 2001 or 2002, Chapel Hill actually passed a resolution to pursue pay-as-you-throw, but they needed to enter into an agreement with the county in terms of or have some cooperation with the county in terms of the anticipated increase in recycling. And because of where the recycling program was at that time, and I'm, like, not up with all the particulars on this anymore, but there was some discouragement from the county at that point, which we're not hearing today. But, you know, Chapel Hill, I imagine, is still ready to continue to look into this if, you know, if we decided that that was the route to go and that it should be done in tandem.
Let me suggest that where we head with this next is if people are interested in, it sounds like a number of people got at the same point in from a few different ways about looking at what other try to compare basically this strategy with perhaps some other strategies that we might be able to employ to reduce our waste stream. It is, I think my math is right, or I think I've read this correctly, mm-hmm. that we spend about $100,000 a year as a town on paying landfill tip fees. And while that's not the ultimate real-world measure of the environmental cost of that, it is one very real cost. I think that's translate to about 1 cent on our tax rate for all of us in Carrboro. Can we perhaps refer this matter back to the staff and ask them to report back to us on what some other possible strategies would be on for reducing our the amount of trash that we're landfilling as a community, and some ideas about what the sort of bang for the buck is on perhaps other strategies. Joel.
Well, my only comment would be is I'm all for making Orange County more environmentally safe and reducing the amount of waste stream that goes in. But on the other hand, you also have to look at what the reality of packaging is and what the reality of our recycling is and what you can put in recycling. What pretty much, unless we find another way to reduce it, is going to the landfill. Now, one reason I'm all for reducing the waste stream is because in our community, the people who are most directly affected by the landfill, and I know this segues into another two-week conversation we're going to have, you know, with that transfer station. So the less waste we have that goes out to the transfer station and goes to some other poor minority community, which it would go because it's not going to go in some rich community because they don't want a landfill. So, you know, if we really want to be serious about it, you know, I just would ask people to think about that, because in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, we're going to have the ability as a board to comment about where that transfer station goes. And the same environmental concerns we have as a community about not putting as much waste stream should be the same kind of concerns we have about where we put that transfer station. Now, you know, that's...
And wherever it's transferred from there, too.
And wherever it's transferred from, too.
Yeah. I agree, and I mean, it sounds to me, I think just solid waste is not the issue. As Dan alluded, it's the whole, and we're trying to build a sustainable community, socially, environmentally, and economically sustainable. So as much as we can have a, you know, we want a balanced environment and the cost for folks to live here and the impact on that we're going to have. I mean, I would not like just to see, you know, reducing the solid waste. It's like, I mean, our ordinances and the policies, every time we authorize those huge mag houses, right, those humongous houses, I mean, it might be maybe more expensive and something we indirectly pay for it, and our future generations will pay for it by the amount of energy this unused space use and fertilizers and huge non-endemic grasses that we grow and we fertilize every year and contaminate the water and throw more nitrates into the Jordan Lake, and it's a whole bunch of things combined. It's not just the garbage. I think we should be thinking outside the box again. Education, but also let's reward good citizen, corporate citizenship, you know. Businesses, let's get creative. I don't know, create an award of folks who think outside the box to reduce the packaging and attract that kind of folks, or folks who will voluntarily say, you know what, I'm going to, you know, set myself some goals, and I think you, we recognize the good folks who believe on Carrboro and in the future of Carrboro. It will get contagious, but in all aspects. So it's sort of like launching a sustainability conservation campaign, not just for this one, but in general. And let's look at, you know, do an inventory of where our town practices and policies are sustainable. And then we can have the moral authority to say to folks, you know, you need to do this too. There
we go. Okay. So should we move the item? Well, would it?
Because it need, cause we need to just adopt this report.
Accept the report. No, we accept the report.
Second.
And is that implicitly refer the question that I kind of framed to the staff? That
right.
Yep.
To staff.
I think it's referring to a lot of these questions. I mean, it's kind of muddy, but I mean, as one of the various and sundry mechanisms that may be discussed in the future, provided, of course, I'm still here when it's discussed again. Those hard math questions are ones I think they're really going to need to be answered to determine the viability of using that mechanism at all if one's really interested in addressing the equity questions. I mean, if one wants to paper over that, then you don't need to crunch those numbers. But
well, the other thing that when we get information back, I'd be curious to see what the tax revenue mix is from those communities that have. And the reason I say that is because, again, you know, we have like an 86-14 mix. Some other communities may have a 50-50 mix, and that makes a difference if the cost of the program is not covering it and their amount of the program is somehow subsidized by some other part of the
right
tax stream. And that makes a difference. Because it's different for us than it's for Mooresville. Because Mooresville is the mirror opposite of us. I don't know if they have pages or so, but I'm using that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we're going to get information, that analysis needs to take into consideration as well.
In particular, I'd be interested to find out how the waste reduction programs in education are the updates for multi-family dwellings to include, all facets of multifamily, because that to me for Carrboro is one of the larger questions, given the sheer number of folks that we have who are in various kinds of multifamily dwellings. So that would be great to update that.
Okay.
All those. Make sure I understand here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing. You're all throwing a lot of stuff out.
Looking at other strategy for reducing recycling and so forth, bang for the buck. Look at the cost implications of some of those other strategies. What tax revenue mix from some of the other communities who have pay-as-you-throw? And then, as Randy was just talking about, what our current education is being done.
Targeting specifically the multifamily dwellings, various kinds of multifamily dwellings. Because Carrboro's density is, you know, a good combination.
I guess I can email you the complicated math question that I asked. But, I mean, it has to do with breaking out one portion of the service and turning it into, you see that?
Let me ask this question, though, I guess the thrust of what I was suggesting is the notion of comparing other strategies to pay-as-you-throw. And I think that's sort of a threshold question, that, in other words, that it may not be that relevant to ask further questions about pay-as-you-throw or to have another report about
right.
pay-as-you-throw, depending on what the results of asking the question, what are some of the other strategies that might be available to us? Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think...
Right.
Let me suggest that rather than that we probe into other questions about pay-as-you-throw right at this moment, that we step back and look at what some of the other strategies might be, and then we can decide whether which if any of those strategies we want to continue to follow up on. If pay-as-you-throw is one of them, then
there are a variety of questions about pay.
Right. Sure, that's fine.
More than we're asked tonight.
Be warned, if the pay-as-you-throw idea reemerges, then I'll expect those questions to be answered and in detail.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. George, did you hear included in that the idea of, like, what the opportunities for waste reduction are, like, you know, looking, you know, as Mark did, going through the sections of the waste composition and, you know, what strategies in each area might be for additional reduction? So I think that would be important to get a complete answer to inform the other question of what the strategies could be.
Okay. Besides perhaps strategies, you know, within a strategy such as reduction, what opportunities such as composting and or other organic waste and so forth that you're referring to?
Right. Or looking at particular pieces, like Mark pointed out, the film, for example. You know, is that an area where there are waste reduction strategies that could be employed? That sort of thing.
Okay.
That's all I
mean. And I guess with the organic waste to look at, because I know there was some program with the restaurant.
Right. Chapel Hill
I think
doing
the county is doing some work along those lines. But
the diversion.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Eat more and throw away less, although that might have, Michelle might have a problem with that.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously, at least for now. I'm sorry, I know both of our speakers wanted to come up and speak again, but I apologize to them. We look forward to your emails about this topic for some further thoughts. We can't come back to you right now. Mr. Manager, agenda item D2, discussion of possible moratorium in Northern Study Area.
On December 5th, the board received a presentation from Alderman Alex Safran and Planning Board Chair James Carnahan to develop a process to reexamine the plan for Carrboro's Northern Study Area. Staff recommends that the board consider the attached resolution providing an opportunity to specify follow-up in response to the Planning Board response or request, and staff does not have a presentation.
Just briefly, the version that is in your packet, do not throw it into the trash, throw it into the recycling bin. There is a revised version that James and I, mostly James, cobbled together using some of Dan's suggestions I think, put something together that works. We liked a lot of what Dan said, and we just kind of rolled that in with an outline of who, what, when, where, why. I don't know how anybody else feels about this. I'm not, you know, the moratorium is a mechanism, right? And it's not something that I'm necessarily wedded to. If people think that it's really important to use that mechanism, great. Unfortunately, the market really sucks right now, so it's not, frankly, as big a deal as it was when we were first discussing it. In terms of using the moratorium to try to put a brake on activity, that's my own view. But what you have before you, I think, is a way to proceed.
Let me suggest that there are sort of two different issues here. One is what process we'd use to update the Northern Small Area Plan, and then the other is, will that process be accompanied by a moratorium? If you see what I'm saying,
that's what I was trying to say.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, but what I want to do is sort of try to split the conversation into, and I don't care which one we start with, but let's all talk about moratorium, and then let's all talk about process.
I get a better idea. Why don't we reverse it?
As you like.
If everybody's like hip to this, then
here's my only reservation about this.
And mark it up as you choose.
Here's my only reservation about this is that one member of the Board of Aldermen is not here tonight because she had various personal commitments that she had to be at, and she does tend to be have strong opinions about public participation, but. You know, I like what I see here. I just would hope we would have an opportunity for her to have some input on
how about this
as well.
Can we just ask you guys to do a markup then real quick? Let's do a markup and see if people have any edits on this, and then we can bring it back when Jackie's here.
I have a question. It's not clear to me why the... I have a question for Alex.
Shoot.
why the appearance commission is relevant to this, that, you know, that we're looking at broader levels here than the level of detail the appearance commission typically.
I think it's right. Well, for starters, the vernacular architectural standards that are a part and parcel of village mixed use, which is the one of the central categories that are currently used in the northern transition area, that's an integral component. And those folks are the people who are ultimately charged with, they don't have legal authority to enforce it, but by any measure, they are the group that makes a determination about whether or not applications are in compliance with the vernacular architectural standards. James, come on up here if I'm misrepresenting it. But that's why it's included.
I had a question, Alex, because I didn't get much time to look at this one as opposed to the one that we had in our packet, mm-hmm. which I did get to look at. The bullet under who would conduct the process,
right. The
last bullet, representatives from Orange County and or Chapel Hill as parties to the joint planning agreement, and then there's a question mark. What are you thinking? Who are these?
What do you got? I mean, I think we're thinking that there need to be representation, somebody from both Orange County and Chapel Hill, because ultimately the fairly large-scale changes, I think, that were contemplated by placing zoning on the ground will require amendments to the joint planning agreement and the joint planning area land use plan. And so those entities are going to have to buy into it. Well, Orange County is going to have to buy into it. Chapel Hill doesn't necessarily have to buy into it because this is not in their transition area. But as a matter of reducing interference, I mean, you know.
They might like to know anyway.
Right. I mean, if we go through this process and somebody over there gets all pissed off because they weren't included, then that's something we don't need.
That would be like an elected official or a planning board member.
Let them decide.
Okay. Well, I like this.
Thanks for your hard work on it. It really helps.
Sure.
So, if there aren't any other comments right now, shall we bring this back as sort of a...
Yeah, James and I are going to assume that y'all be hip to this, and so we're not going to go back and tinker with it anymore.
Yeah,
I'm comfortable.
I think that's right.
Yeah,
okay. We'll look at it in 2 weeks.
Right.
2 weeks.
Sounds like a winner. What do you want
to
do?
We have a public hearing or something next week. Work session next week. Well, let me suggest that staff take this and bring us a resolution that will essentially formally adopt this procedure. Alderman Gist will be there. Hopefully, presumably, at the time that comes back to us, and then if she has some further input, we can do that on the fly. Consider those issues on the fly. Is 2 weeks from now good? I think this is I know it's a real priority for the entire board. So let's do that.
Are we ready to move on to the moratorium? I have a question procedurally about that, which is I'm assuming that. If we were to go ahead with the moratorium, that the earliest we could have a public hearing would be the March public hearing night. Is that correct, Steve?
I believe so.
Well, you have to provide it. You have to treat it as if it's an LUO amendment. Mm-hmm. So whatever the public notice requirements are for that, you know, publish notice at least twice.
March.
The first one at least 10 days before the date of the hearing.
Wouldn't this have to be? This would also have to be a JPA item, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So it'd have to be a joint public hearing with Orange County.
Yeah. Right, and the agreement, I think, Alex, you were mentioning before, the agreement provides that Orange County would also have to adopt
yeah.
or approve the moratorium.
That's
also.
What I'm saying. Yeah. So that's something we need to think about, which is, I mean, given the timeline that we're proposing, I don't know what the Orange County's calendar is like or anything like that. We could get hung up and screwing around with that, theoretically, for as long as it would take to do the work here, if we actually do what we say we're going to do.
That's true.
easily. Also, I don't know if the board is specifically aware, and I believe the staff probably is, there were recent amendments to the general statutes that both authorize moratoria, but also kind of spell out in much greater detail than we've ever seen before exactly what you need to do up front and state in your moratorium, you know, what you want to do, when you want to do it, why you want to do it.
Right. Yeah, I think, you guys presented us with that legislation. So, I mean, on one hand, it's more hoops you got to jump through. On the other hand, it helps narrow the discussion. So in some respects, I found it helpful.
Okay, so somebody who wants to have a moratorium, make the case, because that's what I need to hear right now, or else we don't have anything to discuss.
I don't care one way or the other. I mean, just given the... if people... Here's a caveat, though. I'm hoping, you know, when Jackie comes back, if she doesn't have serious issues with this, that people really mean it when they say that this is the kind of schedule we're going to try to work with. I mean, this doesn't mean come back in 6 months and then fart around for another 6 months while we try to figure out what we just did. This means be done.
Right.
Yeah, and that's going to – that's a very – I have to be honest, that's an extremely aggressive schedule.
It is.
Yeah, I agree that if we're going to do it in 6 months, we don't need a moratorium, although if last June when the planning board – was it June when you all first suggested a moratorium? I think so. You know, so we're already well over 6 months since then. But I'd like to ask James.
Right, that's why we all need to take some stomach medicine and get with it.
I'd like to ask James, since he's here, as chair of the planning board, who's initiated the idea of the moratorium, given this time frame, do you think it's still relevant in such a short time period? Or?
It was partly dovetailed to the moratorium length of time. I'm a little bit concerned about the time because if it's another month before this gets underway, that's March, so the summer comes in there, and it's difficult.
I'm taking a break.
It's difficult to... to get people together during the summertime.
That's true.
So you might want to take that into consideration. Maybe 8 months is more realistic.
Well, what I was going to suggest is it possible for staff, and I apologize, to by paper or email refresh our memories on what we would have to do for the moratorium? Because if we have that kind of information, it would, if it takes a longer process, then I would be for a moratorium.
I see what you're saying.
If the process takes longer, I would be for a moratorium because there's no sense in us investing our resources, which is time, and the staff's time, which is money, to the proposition if there's nothing to change on the ground.
Right.
And in that respect, I would say for us, if it's going to take a longer time, then I think we're going to need a moratorium. I mean, it can be a brief moratorium. It doesn't have to be a long moratorium. I mean, right?
Right.
Can you end the moratorium? This is one question I've always wanted to know, and I haven't read the statute.
So. We're limited to, Bob,
6 months?
Statutorily, I think there's a 6-month limitation.
Okay.
But
yeah.
You can extend it
every
year.
Right.
Well,
that's a max. That's a
right.
6 months at a time.
Right. Well, what I was saying, though, is if the process after we got the moratorium ended, if we finished earlier than the end termination date of the moratorium, we could end the moratorium early.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Right. Well, let me...
unless we get hung up with Orange County don't want.
Here's what I was thinking about this morning about this, and I've been kind of back and forth and all over the map in my thinking about what to do about this. But it struck me... So the main reason that you would have a moratorium would be because we're going to make zoning changes or whatever. We're going to make zoning changes, basically, that will be inconsistent with plans that are... even as we speak, being developed and making their way through the process, and that our new zoning would be so inconsistent with with what's currently winding its way through the system, that that doesn't really make sense for them to proceed down the path that they're on right now. We sort of know specifically who what those we know. I don't necessarily mean the six of us, but I mean it is known who and what those projects are there that would be affected that are actually in some stage.
It's hard to say them
moving forward. And right, we can't. What we don't know is what
because
the
we
result.
Don't know how far they are along, and that's when you.
Well, we don't know what the result of the planning process will be
right.
Either. But let me. What I'm trying to get it down to is just to put it in these terms that, for example, Adam or Omar Zinn, both of them were here back in December or so when we discussed this, and one of the things they pointed out is, well, they've bought this piece of property, Claremont 2, on the south side of Homestead Road, right opposite where their current development is, and they've already paid for it. They've already done all of this engineering work and surveying and whatnot and developing a plan for a subdivision. And the type of thing that the reason to have a moratorium, basically, would be if we thought there was a really good likelihood that we were actually going to put in place some kind of zoning that would effectively prevent them from doing the kind of plan that would really force them to significantly reconsider their plan. If we were going to put in zoning that was going to say, Zinn Brothers, we know you want to have all detached units, but we're gonna force you to have some townhouse development, or we're going to compel you to have a commercial component even though you don't want to, that type of thing. And I think it's possible that, some of those type of provisions will come from this planning process, that those kind of ideas yeah. that will get discussed in this planning process. But I'm not sure that I can picture, just on the overall fairness question, going to the Zinn Brothers and saying, yeah, you throw all your plans out the window, and now bring us back a project that's completely different when they're sort of in midstream. And that's moratorium or no moratorium, I can't see.
Well,
I can't really see doing that, and I'm not suggesting that anybody. I'm not trying to suggest anything except that if you're not really willing to do that, then the moratorium, there's not a lot of point to it.
That's
well,
except to the. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what I would say is this: we just approved a school on the corner of Eubanks and Old Lady City.
Mm-hmm.
You close your eyes and do a Karnak. All of that property, people are thinking residential. Because we know one mm-hmm. of the engines that mm-hmm. drives development in mm-hmm. our area are the schools. It is. I mean, it's nice to live in Orange County, and I love it and don't want to move, but let's be clear.
That's true.
And we may not want another residential subdivision that looks like the Zinn Brothers. And I don't have anything against the Zinn Brothers. But, you know, God only made a certain amount of land.
Mm-hmm.
And we only have a certain amount of land in our zoning jurisdiction.
True.
And we can't just think about today or 24 months. We got to think about 48 months and 60 months down the road. And 10 years down the road. Is that what we're going to be looking at? And, you know, before this discussion came up, I wasn't really for a moratorium. But every time I look up at that corner and I see R20,
mm-hmm.
at least for me, I want to see less of R20 because we have enough of it. Now, I'm not saying I want to see R2, R7.5, R10, but I don't want to see as much R20. And quite frankly, I want to see something that looks commercial.
Right.
Yeah, I have a couple of points. Mark, first of all, I think there's I think the thing you laid out about envisioning a change that's going to affect something, there's a certain sense to that. But there's another point to it, which is we don't know. You know, and we don't know is a good reason to have a moratorium. Another good reason is, let's say we're following this plan that we're going to presumably adopt in 2 weeks, and a big project, a big application comes in, you know, right in the third month of that. And that's going to refocus that whole work. I mean, you know, that's going to, everything we're thinking about is going to all of a sudden be in reaction to that plan, if it's, you know, of the nature of some that we've seen in the past. If, you know, say it's something of, say, a Winmore caliber in terms of controversy. So I think it's good to give ourselves the breathing room away from that kind of immediate influence of the development on our thinking about this. Mm-hmm. So, and I think just to be, you know, that the whole idea of relooking at this plan is we don't really know where we're going to get to at the end of this. The planning boards raise some really good questions that are in the memo in our packet that give us some indication of the things that make sense to look at. But I think, you know, and that we're kind of agreed, some of those are repeated in the memo on the process, that, you know, that's what we're going to look at. But I think there is a lot of sense to a moratorium. And I think considering the summer, as Joel points out, and considering that at the end of the 6 months to go through this process, that we then have a few months to actually implement any changes, that the whole thing, you know, very well could take that 6 months of a moratorium plus a six-month extension if we choose to go that route.
I just wanted to add that several planning boards, several advisory boards, the planning board, the environmental advisory board, and the transportation advisory board spent a good chunk of time thinking and deliberating and making recommendations in support of a moratorium for exactly what Joel and Dan have said. We're looking at a limited amount of land that's left where we have several groups. I mentioned three advisory groups, even the New Horizons advisory group, who have said, you know, maybe we need to consider a commercial out in this area. So I do think the zoning issue comes into play, and I think, you know, time is running short, so I think it makes sense to support a moratorium while we take a real fresh look.
The moratorium would only impact the folks who are in the planning process who had not started any work yet, right?
Well, no, it would staff.
Well, the way the statute is written anyway, as amended, is any application that's in the pipeline already for, you know, subdivision plat approval or a special use permit or conditional use application, as long as those are in the pipeline at the time that this board sets the public hearing, those plans are exempt from the moratorium. Right. They proceed on with the normal course of business.
Which goes directly to the what I was trying to get to, which was that now prior to this legislation, the gray area that that you alluded to was true.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're cut out of that deal.
I see.
But the real utility is what Dan and Joel were talking about, which is that what we do not do is accept new applications during this period of time.
Well,
that's where the real utility.
This is helpful. It's helping me figure it out. For example, though, the university is proposing to build faculty and staff, hopefully staffed housing, at the Carolina Commons property, for example. We all know about that project, at least in passing. I don't know much about it, but I know it's out there and the university is working on it. They're developing a plan. Have they submitted an application at this point for that development? They haven't. So, for example, that's the type of project. That would be an example of the type of project that would be held up by a moratorium here.
You know, that would be unfortunate. But I'm still leaning toward the moratorium. And you can pick up the phone and call Jack Evans or somebody at UNC and say, here's what we're looking at. What are y'all looking at, and when are you going to file that application? And I think that's a reasonable question to ask them.
But didn't Mike say last time that we could exempt state or county-owned property?
If we can exempt state or county-owned property, I think it was understood that the university, is my understanding, they were going to continue to own that property.
Right, they are.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're exempt, then that issue
is off the table.
Well, it also depends on how you define the boundary of the study and the moratorium.
Well, let me ask.
Let me just offer this. Let me offer this, though, which is that I'm not really necessarily sure whether it's in our best interest to do that, because the idea here is to come out, is to have an end product that is integrated. And if we're going to do that, I think it creates a process problem if we just wait for them to submit some application, and then we got to work around it. That puts us back in the dilemma, I think, that you were raising earlier.
Well, I gather from – I got a phone call a while back from somebody on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, and he was not calling either to support or to oppose the moratorium, which he referred to as the maybe-torium. His primary complaint was that it would be helpful to know whether a moratorium really is in the works or not. So let me suggest that when this matter comes back to us we don't have a resolution right now, do we?
Let me offer this. I mean, I've heard around this table what sounds like majority support to do that in some form or fashion. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to have to go through some steps in order to satisfy both the statutory criteria, and second, we're going to have to set a joint public hearing with Orange County and do an amendment to the joint planning area, land use plan, as well as the joint planning agreement in order to implement.
Okay.
And that's going to take a while. So I think I could have gone either way, because I didn't want to put us into a box. But again, I hear majority support around here, so I think that's the direction that we should move. Since we're limited to 6 months statutorily anyway, James, we're talking about 8 months, and that issue is going to come up at renewal anyway if we –
Well, it'll take a little time to adopt it, too. So.
Yeah. So I would move if we instruct staff to begin taking the necessary steps to put this on public hearing.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we move forward with holding public hearing and other steps necessary for a moratorium in the northern area. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passes.
Can I just clarify that would mean that Steve would initiate some conversation with the county in terms of scheduling the hearing?
Yes.
And that the attorney presumably would work up some appropriate language under the new statute that would allow us to get where we want to go, considering, you know, what's in the planning board memo and also in the proposal we have on the northern study area, small area plan, you know, as kind of identifying our goals.
Yeah, begin with the administrative stuff since we haven't acted on this yet. You know, I mean, do however you guys want to do it, but this, in theory, unless we have an objection, is going to be the operating document. So to satisfy the statute, basically it's going to say, we want to do a moratorium for 6 months. To do what? To do that.
Right. One thing, I know you all been thinking about it, but I'd ask you to think more about it, and that is, again, the boundaries of the moratorium, because as we think about asking Orange County, for one thing, this could impact their Twin Creeks Park project, which they're about to submit. And
I would think that in your investigations with the county that hopefully the first things you would ask if they had problems with those issues, that we hear about.
One thing I do recall distinctly that our other town attorney told us last time we discussed this is that we could potentially that we could do a moratorium that is by development sector or type. That is, say, it could be a residential moratorium, residential development moratorium. And that would be one way of. You know, at least we wouldn't be preventing ourselves from hearing about a commercial development if somebody wanted to bring a proposal forward.
And I don't have a problem with limiting just to residential development. And the park would not.
Is there a motion that we amend it to be a residential?
Let's think about it real quick.
Let's think about it for a minute.
Okay. Residential only, are there any other use categories? Well, that covers a pretty broad range of categories.
Well, it's pretty much all that anything is done for out there.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything?
Do we have anything that's zoned for like a gas station that we don't want to?
What's that red at the Calvander?
That's the gas station.
Trish.
Is that where the gas station is?
Yeah, it's Reagan's
station. Yeah, that's already in that use case. It ain't going to happen that fast. So moved.
Okay.
Second. I guess the second or in second.
Moved and seconded that we clarified that it would be a residential moratorium, development moratorium. All right. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Okay, matter passed unanimously. So that will at least address the Twin Parks issue.
James, are you comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. And it would eliminate first school as well.
Right.
Right, if in fact that is within
that might not
the,
even be in the study area.
It might or
yes.
might. It depends on, well, it depends.
It is.
Well, it is within the old northern study area, but it's not necessarily. It's up to us to decide
which
what boundary.
What?
Where they want to build that school along.
First
school.
Oh, yeah.
It's behind Sewell.
But,
it, which
but in any case, it's not a residential use, so it doesn't,
no,
it
doesn't matter.
Matter.
It doesn't work.
Okay. And they're not going to submit an application in the next 6 months, I predict, anyway. But
just right. Last thing before we wind that up, do you want, as just the last thing, for James and I to put our heads together on amending the schedule before Jackie?
Amending the schedule. Oh, I'm sorry.
In the proposal. Because we're talking about 6 months, so, you know.
Mm-mm, keep it at six.
I mean, the moratorium is limited to six statutorily.
Right.
But I'm just talking about the schedule for getting the work done.
6 months.
Okay.
Stay with it. You know, the only thing, realistically, let me just say, though, realistically, it says,
well, I know this.
Part of it is suggested Board of Aldermen involvement and so forth, so don't be scheduling that like August 2nd or something.
Bob, I also just want to make sure we remember that we are limited to an initial six-month period
right.
with 1 6-month extension.
Right.
So
yeah.
For our moratorium and our schedule, we've got to be planning on 6 months.
Right, this right. document has to agree.
Right.
So right. So logically, it should stay 6 months
yeah.
for now.
Yeah. I mean,
the 6 month extension would address an issue like if we.
Right. But we cannot put in the document that we plan to do 8 months.
Yeah. Right. When we get
yeah.
towards the end of that 6 months, if it looks like we need another 3 months or whatever, then we address that
right.
by
right.
extending.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I remember.
Oh, we forgot about summer. So.
Nah. We did that the first time we went through this. We did
right.
two extensions.
Let's move on to this transit committee. Have any of the board members actually spoken with anybody that might potentially be nominated to this? My understanding is, just for clarity, that they're not looking for elected officials.
That's right.
To be appointed to this.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I spoke with Alice. Because she sent it, the memo came from her.
Right.
Alice Gordon.
Alice Gordon. And she clarified that. And I got a call from Heidi Perry this afternoon, and she's interested in having her name put
the name in the slot.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think she'd be great.
Don't we need somebody else?
Me too.
That's two.
They invited us to submit two names.
Yeah, we don't have to submit two, and we may or may not have any of our two actually appointed to this thing when it gets down to it, but hopefully we will.
Oh, and it might just be, well.
I think it might be good just to have if there's somebody else that we know that may be interested, just as a sub.
I thought it was interesting to note that Chapel Hill had nominated Roger Perry from the UNC Board of Trustees.
Well, that's still... That,
I just thought it was interesting.
they do say it's different. I'm not against this appointment. It might be good to have him.
For a team.
He does live in Chapel Hill.
Do we have someone else?
Yeah, James.
James, are you interested?
And he probably
my
has.
Is already in the
hand. Oh, it is?
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well.
Through
in your hat.
You've already been nominated
through Village Project.
Through the Village Project. Okay.
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 Then let's broaden our influence.
Well, or maybe if we put James in for us as well, then that's going to increase the attention he receives. By.
I second that. That's a motion.
Yeah, that's a motion. If Joel's seconding it, I'll make a motion.
Two votes now.
Are we aware of any bus drivers that that live in town of Carver? Get a little different. Give them a little different perspective.
There is one who's
Dave
who serves on the TAB.
Yeah.
But he and
we can make him an alternate.
We don't get to a point. We're just nominating.
Right.
We'd have to ask him, though, if he wanted to do
it.
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, we would.
All right, well, that's fine. We'll put James down. That's fine. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. We'll catch him next time.
Yeah.
Or we can but also, I should say that Heidi polled the TAB members.
She did.
And no one responded other than herself. So,
implicitly, Dave is...
So we're putting forth both nominations, and yes.
Yeah. So Heidi Perry and James.
Okay.
James Clonahan.
Very good.
Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we nominate Heidi Perry and James Clonahan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. I think that is all for our formal agenda. Is that correct? Board members, are there matters from board members?
I would like to make a request.
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to have an agenda item to discuss the end of the Carolina North process with our representatives to the process.
Mm. Okay.
Fairly soon before the, not next week, but before we start talking about the budget, if that's possible.
Okay, and we should get you all a copy of the final report that came out.
I didn't get a copy yet.
You didn't get the email?
I did get an email.
Yeah. Sarah, if you can remind me, I'll send that. If you don't have that report, I can forward that on to you that you can redistribute.
Did you want to talk about the legislative breakfast scheduling issues?
Yeah, just briefly. I mean, I don't want to fuss about it for this year. It's sort of been the what's done is done and get along to go along kind of thing. But I think, I mean, if I understand correctly, John, you can't be there on the 26th. Is that right? You're out of town. And I don't think Jackie can be there. And I'm going to miss a good part of it. So I think my suggestion is that we start earlier.
Than 7:30?
Not early in the morning. That's a good interpretation. No, what
that's
I mean.
It might be for 10 years.
No.
Bye.
My suggestion is that we start in, like, November, trying to think about the schedule for this and try and do it. No, because the deadline for... It's either the House or Senate, I forget which one, for local bills, is like right around the end of February. So that's why we're pushed up against that date.
Right.
But we got pushed up moving back because we were, we delayed in terms of looking into it. And I know it was on our agenda in December, and we postponed it. And so we sort of inadvertently put ourselves in a bind. So
well, to solve that problem, we could institutionally ask to meet with, at least separate the discussion of what we want to talk with them with the scheduling portion.
Right.
So we automatically, in December, ask the town clerk to contact them and say, when can we meet you with the first 2 weeks of January? Because they don't start till the middle of January normally, or the third week in January normally. So you could meet with them the first 2 weeks of January where everybody is,
That's a good idea. And the other idea I want to run past you all is, we're all here every Tuesday night. So if there was a Tuesday when we all came at 6, and instead of having a buffet breakfast, have a buffet dinner and met with the legislators, to do that once a year for this purpose. Because I know Jackie could be there. I know I could be there for that. But I know Joel, that could be harder for you and maybe for John.
For the session,
right, before the session begins, early January.
Well, the other thing, can they get out?
Right, yeah, I think that's the big issue.
Well, if it's before the session begins, then
right.
Yeah, that's
issue.
The idea.
But I think those are good suggestions. I apologize for how it worked out in this particular case. We were presented, and I don't know, it may be that they were only thinking in terms of the 7:30 a.m. time slot, and so it may have restricted the dates more than it necessarily needed to, but our legislative delegation put their heads together, and they came up with two and only two dates that they could make themselves collectively available. I ended up having to make a choice between two dates that didn't work very well for a variety of people. So I apologize for that, but hopefully we have a reasonably unified point of view on our agenda. And so,
we have to follow the new Ethics Act and Lobbying Act. So that means it has to be food for immediate consumption. I think we're going to have to invite the public. Or if not, we're going to have to charge them, so we'll need to know the cost of the breakfast, so I think. But I'll email you, Steve, and I'm somewhat.
So what?
We will take notice of that.
What they?
We wound up on February. It's going to be February 26th, which is a Monday at 7:30 in the morning.
And what was the other date?
February 19th.
It was the Friday of that week.
It was a Friday. So
it was like March
2nd.
March 2nd.
I mean, I don't see, can any bill or anything we want to convey to them before whatever deadline there is, we can send that without meeting with them and then clarify with the majority. I think the whole point of meeting with the our delegates is to have as many of us there to reinforce or clarify any points that, of our interest, but we can still comply with the deadlines. And
our delegation has a few tricks for dealing with the deadlines. They can introduce a basically blank bill or that type of thing, and I think they're preparing to do that for parts of what we've requested. So,
and how many people can do it on March?
I can't. It was an equal number. There were an equal number of conflicts on both days. Was the upshot of it. Except that it wasn't that for one person. It wasn't that they couldn't do it at all. It's just that they couldn't get there until 8:30 rather than 7:30. So that there was. It seemed my conclusion was that there was the slightest bit less conflict on the Monday than on the Friday.
So can I conclude with a more specific suggestion,
yes,
which is that we ask staff to make sure that on our agenda for sometime after Election Day in November that we have a discussion on scheduling this meeting that any board members elect can be invited to be in the room so we can find out what our greatest flexibility is as a board,
okay,
and then give a range of dates that will work for the most of us. Mm-hmm. To the legislators.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. Very good. And as long as we're on scheduling, for just one last second, Mr. Manager or Ms. Clerk, when are we proposed to be back in session in August? What is our first meeting in August?
It's the
eighth.
14th, I think.
We need to.
The third Tuesday.
I think it's the third Tuesday in August. All of July, and I think the first two weeks in August.
That'd be the third week in August.
I would like to propose that I'm not willing to meet before August 20th.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make any difference because I've typically missed the third week in August to go on vacation with a group of my friends. So I leaning towards September, but I may be in the minority view.
Okay.
The sooner we know from you all about it, if you're serious about making a change, the better in terms of scheduling.
Can you email me specifically what that date is, and then
we can do that.
A proposal needs to be put forward to the board about this matter.
So that we can let developers and other folks know about scheduling with advisory boards and getting things before the board.
Okay.
Very good.
We work hard.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.